Jack Boland has literally changed the lives of thousands of people, and he can help you change yours. The following lessons are designed to give you the information and inspiration you need to make your life what it can be. This program is entitled The Secret Power of Serendipity. And now, Jack Boland.
Ella Wheeler Wilcox wrote, "Trust in thine own capacity as thou wouldst trust in God himself. Thy soul is but an emanation of the whole. Thou dost not dream what forces lie in thee, vast and unfathomed as the grandest sea." And it's true. There's not one of us here who fully comprehends the things that are happening in us and all around us. If we could but see, we would be so encouraged, so excited, so thrilled. We are a living part of a living universe, grand and glorious. It has plans for itself and it has plans for us, but we must be lifted up, we must grow up and become conscious beings before we can fully fathom and fully experience the good that is already ours. In our language, the word chance is defined as an unexpected, random, or unpredicted event, a fortuitous event. Now, most people think of chance as something that just happens, as if by chance. You know, you say as if by chance, meaning having no real connection with any part of my life. It just occurred. Something that I bumped into on the way to wherever it was that I really was going. Most people think of chance as something with no choice involved. But I believe that you can prove to yourself that everything that happens is connected to other things, other invisible things, wonderful things that could happen. There is no such thing as an event that is not connected with other events higher than itself. I believe that if we knew the mystical secret of making marvelous things manifest, that in any moment, every moment, we could be creators of a personal destiny as wonderful as anything that you may have read about in Aladdin in the Arabian Nights. I believe that. These lessons are an attempt to share with you the secret power of serendipity. And serendipity is defined as the faculty or ability of making fortuitous and unexpected discoveries by accident. Except I would take out the last two words in that definition. Serendipity is the faculty or ability of making fortuitous and unexpected events occur by choice, not by chance. In true serendipity, there is no chance, no accident. These are events that have been chosen, and they are chosen events that are trying to happen to us. I simply don't believe that accident has anything to do with serendipity. I believe that serendipity is a law that is little understood, and therefore we stumble over it, and it appears to be by chance simply because we keep stubbing our toe on that which really is. And I believe that every human being could live a serendipitous life. Now, the word serendipity was coined by Horace Walpole after the characters in the fairy tale, the Three Princes of Serendip, and Serendip is an ancient name for Ceylon. Before I continue further, I would like to thank Marcus Bach for bringing to me the word serendipity when his book, The World of Serendipity, was first published in 1970. Now, the new paperback edition is published by Divorce, and I urge you to get a copy because this book will open a new and exciting world right around you, right where you are in your own life. And in these lessons, I will be sharing Bach's World of Serendipity in generous portions as we go through these lessons. Now, in 1970, when this book was published, I bought it and read it and was delighted with it and remembered the word. I had not heard the word prior to that moment. And think of it often when serendipitous things occur in my life. If you have ever wondered whether life has any tricks up its sleeve, the answer is definitely yes. God has the most wonderful sense of humor. Now, most people will agree that life certainly does have tricks up its sleeve, but most people believe that life is playing tricks on them, not tricks for them. But serendipity has to do with the secret of learning to turn the tricks of life to good advantage, or to catch on to the magic of causing things to happen by choice, not by chance. Now, Bach found this secret neatly packaged in a single word, and that word is serendipity. And when he discovered what it meant and how it worked, he was never quite the same again. And I promise you that if you will listen carefully tonight and in the lessons that follow, if you will have ears that hear and will extract from these ideas certain secrets, your life will never be the same again. That's a promise. There's nothing more exciting when you come right down to it than learning how to take advantage of the serendipity technique. But first, let me give you some background to our story. Once upon a time in the 18th century, there lived an Englishman named Horace Walpole. Though he was an Earl of Oxford, a graduate of Eton College, and a member of Parliament, he was best known for his passion for writing letters. Horace Walpole wrote letters like no one you have ever seen who wrote letters. He wrote letters and letters and letters. But they were marvelous letters. His letters were so marvelous that the people that he wrote answered him regularly. And in some libraries today, there are literally wheelbarrows full of letters that he wrote and of the responses that he got. Now, as an example, one of his many correspondents was Sir Horace Mann, who was an envoy to Florence, Italy. And Walpole wrote 848 letters to Mann, who replied 848 times. And that must be some kind of a record. But important for our purpose this evening is a single letter that Walpole wrote to Mann on one cold and foggy winter's day in January of 1754. Now, on this occasion, Walpole dipped his quill pen deeper than usual into the ink and the personal reminiscence, and confessed to Sir Horace that an old Persian fairy tale had changed his life. The tale, he explained, had to do with the three princes of Serendip, which was the ancient name for Ceylon. Now, these three young noblemen, while traveling through the world, rarely found the treasures they were looking for. They set out on a quest. But that which they were looking for hardly ever occurred. But something even better happened to them, for they continually ran into other treasures, equally great or even greater, that which they were not seeking. In looking for one thing, they found something else. And it began to dawn on them that this was one of life's sly and wonderful tricks. And when they realized this, they got an entirely new slant on life. And every day resulted in new and thrilling experiences for them. An important principle in serendipity. You and I have thought that we knew what we wanted in life, haven't we? And we've set out to find it. Having found it, if you will take careful note, that which you thought you wanted and needed frequently is the very thing that turns out to be the problem. In time, the thing that you wanted is the thing that you want to get rid of. Is that not correct? Well, one of life's sly little tricks is that on the way in your quest to achieve, to get what you want from life, life has a way, a planned way, a way by choice of slipping into your experience that which you really wanted and needed, but did not know that you wanted or needed. The higher thing that you could not possibly have sought because you could not have conceived of it. So even though their goals eluded them, they were more than rewarded with their wayside discoveries. And soon, it became as though an unseen power that was guiding them and better than they could guide themselves. And they came to know that what was best for them in the long run would be their experience. And consequently, they were very serene. Serene. It simply did not matter what happened to the princes of Serendip. They were relaxed, calm, poised, graceful, absolutely magnificent. Because they knew that what was happening at the moment was not really what counted, that the thing that they could not see quite yet would appear. One of life's great secrets. But they were serene. Did you hear what I said to you? Most people in their quest are not very serene when life presents its daily massage. Now, this was the gist of the fairy tale, but was it a fairy tale? When the princess began to dip into life with serenity, peace. That's the real meaning of serendipity. Everything that happened was exciting. They had what Walpole called a thrilling approach to life. And he said, that's the way things happen to me when I dip into things with serenity. It's as if a talisman came to my aid in the nick of time. One of the experiences of serendipity is that you will always be rescued at the 11th hour, the final moment. But doesn't that make life exciting? That's what movies are made of. In a movie, you don't get the answer in the first reel, do you? They set it up so that at the last moment, you're snatched out of the way of the charging engine. Well, life can be that way. Now, after 1754, the word serendipity lay practically unnoticed for 100 years, and then scholars stumbled on it and began to talk about it, and it actually appeared in a couple of the early dictionaries. For example, the dictionary of Sir James A.H. Murray defined the word as the faculty of making happy and unexpected discoveries by accident. Now, there's that word again, by accident. Bach first found the word through one of his own serendipitous experiences several years ago. While he was doing research in the history of spiritual healing, he accidentally ran into the autobiography of Walter B. Cannon, in which this noted physician had a chapter that was entitled Gains from Serendipity. You don't have to be much of a scholar of these things to know that a great many of medical sciences, important gains have occurred by accident. There's that word again, by accident. A person was looking for one thing and found another thing. Quite unexpected. They could not have looked for the thing they found because they didn't know it was there to look for. But they found it by accident. Penicillin was discovered by accident. Many other things have been discovered by accident. Now, in reading Cannon's account, he cited what he thought to be one of the very earliest and best of all serendipity examples, and I think it is too. It's the example of the biblical account of Saul. And I would like to read to you, I would like to share with you the story of Saul from 1 Samuel, the 9th and 10th chapters. But before I do, let me tell you that Saul became the first king of Israel. And the word Saul metaphysically means the action of the will in attaining that which it desires. The action of the will. Did you hear the word action? Action. Serendipity rarely happens to a person who has the covers pulled up over their head in bed. Rarely will you have a serendipitous experience watching television. Action. Saul is that state of mind that becomes the action of the will in attaining that which it desires. You must also know that one of the characters here is Samuel. Now, Samuel was the last prophet and judge before Israel had a king. And Samuel stands for the level of consciousness that is in conscious contact with God, a high state of consciousness. And it was Samuel through whom the Lord spoke, designating Saul as the king. Now, listen to this remarkable serendipitous experience, because it really is your experience. Don't think of these characters now being back there. You are each of them. You are all of them. Now, Saul was the son of Kish. One day, Kish's donkey strayed away. So he sent Saul and a servant to look for them. I must back up and tell you that Saul, the son of Kish, was the most handsome man in Israel. He was head and shoulders taller than anyone else in the land. And one translation says that he was taller from his shoulders than anyone in Israel, meaning he was smarter than almost any of the rest of them. A handsome, bright young man. They travel all through the hill country of Ephraim and the entire land of Benjamin, but couldn't find them anywhere, the donkeys, that is. And finally, Saul said to the servant, "Let's go home. By now, my father will be more worried about us than about the donkeys." Let me pause for a moment and share a principle of serendipity. Here's this handsome young man, and his father sends him out on a chore, looking for lost donkeys in a dry, arid country. Who wants to go looking for some donkeys? Notice there was no complaint on his part. He just went and did it. He went into action. But the servant said, "I've just thought of something. There's a prophet who lives here in this city who is held in high honor by all of the people because everything he says comes true. Let's go and find him, and perhaps he can tell us where the donkeys are." "But we don't have anything to pay him with," said Saul. "Even our food is gone, and we don't have a thing to give him." Well, the servant said, "I have a dollar. We can at least offer it to him and see what happens." "All right," Saul agreed. "Let's try it." A principle of serendipity. You will notice that Saul and his servant were willing to pay the price. Most people are looking for something for nothing. No effort. They were willing to pay the price, not only the monetary price, but the price in terms of consciousness, of attitude. They were very serene. Perfect harmony existed between them. So they started into the city where the prophet lived. And as they were entering the gates, they saw Samuel coming out toward them to go up the hill. The Lord had told Samuel the previous day, "About this time tomorrow, I will send you a man from the land of Benjamin. You are to anoint him as the leader of my people. He will save them from the Philistines, for I have looked down on them in mercy and have heard their cry." When Samuel saw Saul, the Lord said, "That's the man I told you about. He will rule my people." Just then Saul approached Samuel and asked, "Sir, can you please tell me where the prophet's house is?" "I am the prophet," Samuel replied. "Go on up the hill ahead of me. Go up higher." A point about serendipity. If you wish to have a serendipitous experience, you must always be seeking the higher consciousness. The spiritual life must be the most important thing in your life. Come up higher, and we'll eat together in the morning, and I will tell you what you want to know and send you on your way. And don't worry about those donkeys that were lost 3 days ago, for they have been found. And anyway, you own all the wealth of Israel now. Now, how did Samuel know about the donkeys, except that his intuition had spoken? He was a person of high consciousness. "Pardon me, sir," Saul replied. "I'm from the tribe of Benjamin, the smallest in Israel, and my family is the least important of all the families of the tribe. You must have the wrong man." A principle of serendipity, humility. The self-centered, egotistical person taking credit will rarely have a serendipitous experience. Then Samuel took Saul and his servant into the great hall and placed them at the head of the table, honoring them above the 30 special guests. And Samuel then instructed the chef to bring Saul the choicest cut of meat, the piece that had been assigned for the guest of honor. "Go ahead and eat it," Samuel said, "for I was saving it for you even before I invited these others." Then Samuel took a flask of olive oil and poured it over Saul's head and kissed him on the cheek and said, "I am doing this because the Lord has appointed you to be the king of his people, Israel. When you leave me, you will see two men beside Rachel's tomb, in the land of Benjamin. They will tell you that the donkeys have been found and that your father is worried about you. And when you get to the oak of Tabor, you will see three men coming toward you who are on their way to worship God at the altar of Bethel. They will greet you and offer you two of the loaves which you are to accept. After that, you will come to God's hill, where the garrison of the Philippines is. At that time, the Spirit of the Lord will come mightily upon you, and you will prophesy with them, and you will feel and act like a different person." A principle of serendipity. As you begin to believe in life, the capacity of life to appoint your way in advance, as you begin to believe that there are choices already made for you that can happen, you will begin to receive instructions and guidance, and you will find that certain things will happen as though planned along the way. And when you get to a certain place, there will be the persons. You'll be at exactly the right place at precisely the right moment to have the experiences that you could not possibly have arranged if all the king's horses and all the king's men had been working in your behalf. Point by point, moment by moment, events will occur. And a mighty thing will happen, a change of consciousness, a change of attitude, change of awareness. You will feel and act like a different person. And from that time on, your decision should be based on whatever seems best under the circumstances. For the Lord will guide you. So often in our lives, our minds are already made up. Isn't this true? We know how we're going to act when certain things occur. And we go out and act that way, and so there's no spontaneity. Spirit doesn't have a chance. The princes of Serendip did not act that way. They found themselves responding differently in different situations in a very relaxed, carefree manner. Changed consciousness. The Lord will guide you. That's one of the secrets, the secret of serendipity. Serendipity is that state of experience in which you are truly being guided, and so the events that occur are not by chance, but by choice, pre-selected. As a matter of fact, events that have already been set into motion, even though yet invisible to the eye, they are there. Now, are you catching on to the secret of serendipity? Are you really beginning to believe that life is so constructed that happenings you never expected to happen are actually things that were supposed to happen? And are you beginning to believe that you're the most important player in the serendipity drama? You are. You are. Now, when you begin to find yourself involved in assignments as elusive and as mundane as the one given to Saul, remember when he was told to go find those lost jackasses? Catch yourself and say, "Wait a minute. I may be on my way to something serendipitous. There's something here that doesn't meet the eye. I am going to look for that invisible thing that is tied as if by some magical string to this circumstance that I otherwise would have resisted." Every now and then, in a moment of despair, you will run into a Samuel who will ask you to come up higher. Have you noticed that from time to time, when you're really trying to be depressed, someone will come along and they will not permit it. They'll say, "Climb that hill. Come on, wake up." Is that not true? That begins to happen along the road of serendipity. And such a person will cause you to really believe that you're slated for bigger things, and you are slated for bigger things. The best part of your life has not happened yet. It hasn't. And serendipitous minds know that, and they're constantly expecting the larger thing to occur, even in the smallest event or circumstance. So if you've ever wondered whether life has any tricks up its sleeve, the answer is definitely yes, and the tricks are loaded in your behalf. But only a few people have learned to turn the tricks of life to good advantage, and it's only a rare mind that has caught on to the magic of this thing called serendipity. I want to thank A.E. Martin of Oklahoma City for bringing the word apocatastasis to my attention and for giving me the idea for doing this series of lessons. And for me, it was a very serendipitous event. A.E. Martin appeared here in this church 3 or 4 years ago. One day my telephone rang. He'd been listening to some cassette tapes that he ran across down in Texas or Oklahoma. He said, "I like what you're saying. I think I'll come up and sit on the front row Sunday." And Sunday, he appeared. An action person, A.E. Martin. He attended both services, and we've been good friends and mastermind partners ever since. And I saw A.E. in Dallas early this year. He brought some friends down from Oklahoma to attend a seminar that I was conducting there. And a short time later, A.E. sent me a print of a prize futuristic sketch of an oil field scene that was created by artist Wiley White. Now, the drawing is named Apocatastasis, as a result of being inspired by Bach's World of Serendipity. White was inspired, and so he did this drawing. Now, I had been planning for months to get that sketch framed, which incidentally has my name on the oil rig. And 3 weeks ago, I had searched and searched for an idea to do this class. Inspiration had eluded me, and I was down to the wire. I just had to come up with something, some idea for this class. And so I asked for help from God and from Karen Boland and from Lenore Tucci. And on this day, this final day that I had to make the decision as to what this class would be, we were in my study going over possible class subjects. And Karen looked at the books in my bookcase and walked behind my desk and picked The World of Serendipity by Bach. And it fell open to reveal a letter from A.E. Martin dated May of this year. "Dear Jack," and A.E. said some nice things, and then he wrote, "under separate cover, I have sent you a print from one of my paintings with your name on the oil rig. The enclosed check is in the amount of $50, and it could be used for a frame of your own choice. I would have sent the print framed except for shipping problems. The title of the painting came from the book that I'm enclosing, of which I'm enclosing a copy. Now, the book had been sent to me and placed in my bookshelf by my secretary months ago without my knowledge. I did not know that the book was there, had not seen it. Now, you can be sure that that print is being framed at this moment and will be in my office probably sometime next week. When that letter fell out of the book, and a $50 check that had been there in my bookcase for months without my knowledge came at precisely the right moment that I was looking for a subject for this lesson. Do you not know that instantly the choice of serendipity was made? That was a very serendipitous event, wasn't it? Well, you may never have heard of the word apocatastasis. And you may have as much difficulty pronouncing it as I do when you try. And I would not bother you with this word, except that it could conceivably solve any problem that exists in your life. It could certainly get you out of the doldrums, or if you should need a factor as powerful as this, it could restore your will to live. There's evidence that the princes of Serendip imparted both the word and its secret power to some of their initiates. Now, there's at least one story illustrating that this point has come down to us. It seems that one day a man named Sabi bin Sa' came to the princes of Serendip for consultation. They were passing through the ancient country of Ceylon, and Sabi bin Sa' was a young, handsome, beautifully dressed man of nobility, a mirza, very much like Saul. A man of nobility. And he sadly told the princess his unfortunate story. A flood had washed away his newly built summer home on a beautiful estate, which he had purchased at great cost on the banks of a river. The irony about this story was that the stream had never been known to flood, but no sooner had Sabi bin Sa' built his house than the waters came, leaving him poorer and no wiser. No wiser, that is, until the princess looked at him observingly and said, "Apokastasis." Okay. Now, 3 years later, when the princes returned, a messenger came to them and invited them to visit the mirza. Sabi bin wanted them to visit him on his new summer mansion that was situated on a lovely promontory high above the river on a cliff. What had happened? Well, the devastation of his former home had forced him to go into action to search for a new location to rebuild. And in the process, he discovered not only the new location, but a field of pure agates, which were priceless because in those days, they were used as talisman and amulets to guard the wearer from disaster. People believed that agates had mystical powers. And suddenly, he was very wealthy again. "Oh, my princes," exclaimed Sabi bin Sa', "but for your assurance of apokastasis, I would never have had the patience or the faith to have what is mine today. But for you, I would have spent my days in remorse." And the princes smiled and said, "If only all men could learn the secret. If only everyone could remember the saying, until tomorrow becomes today, men will be blind to the good fortune hidden in an unfortunate act." The mirza bowed low and said, "How true it is. Until tomorrow becomes today, we are reluctant to believe." And what he was saying was this, that even as he stood in the devastation of his flood-wrecked home, the art of apokastasis had helped him to project his thoughts out of the ruins into that distant day when the good would come out of seeming misfortune. What happens ordinarily in a disastrous event, or what appears to be a disastrous event? A person stands there experiencing and feeling not only the disaster of the moment, but actually projecting that disaster forward into the next moment, the next hour, the next day. They see themselves always living out the devastation. Apokastasis, though, is the serendipitous secret that in every seed of seeming tragedy is hidden the fruit of glory and reward. And the secret is this. This is the way life is. Life is always this way. Every event is that way. Not just with some people some of the times, but everything that is occurring to you is attached to some marvelous thing that lies beyond it if you could but believe beyond where you are, if you could but project yourself forward. And that's why Bach calls it the feed-forward formula, which is to say that in the moment of despair or seemingly irreversible circumstances, send your thoughts out on a shaft of faith into tomorrow, where the full meaning of today becomes apparent. Move forward in your mind and stand at a place, a high place, looking back upon this moment, laughing at it. Laugh at the tragedy. The princes did. They stood relaxed, shoulders back, smiling, regardless of what occurred. Some of the most tragic things occurred to them. And they smiled and said, "Where is it? Where is it? There it is. There it is. Now I see it." And it occurred because it was always there. And it is always there for you, and it is always there for me. Is this easy or simple? Not always, because it requires courage, control, and audacious confidence. You have to be audacious to think this way. Normal human beings do not. But who wants to be normal? It requires a romantic tendency to love your life, to love your fate, to love the moment, to love the circumstances, to become an adventurer. Are you willing to be an adventurer? Are you? Are you willing to sally forth, meeting every situation head on, and when tragedy comes, expect it and be delighted by it and even smile and part it with your hands and with your mind and look beyond it into the fortuitous event that is not there by chance but by choice. The thing that you could not get to except that you walked through the problem. Apocatastasis means restitution, restoration, and recovery. Restitution, restoration, and recovery. Let me tell you of an event that occurred in my life. I just turned 19 years of age, moving out of a childhood and an early youth that appeared to me to be a disaster. The things I wanted in life would surely be denied me. I've not had the opportunity to go to college. I went to night school to learn to be a machinist's helper. My first job at the age of 18 was with Hercules Powder Company. I went into the machine shop, and I was good at what I did. And in a very short time, I was advanced and then advanced beyond that point. I was good at what I was doing, and I loved what I was doing. I enjoyed it. One night on the 12 to 8 shift, I worked the swing shift. It was not busy, and many of the guys were sitting around telling jokes, but I loved what I was doing, and I was working. And as I worked, I lifted an iron bar, and it fell on my right kneecap. It was no problem. I limped. The foreman saw me and said, "Jack, go to the hospital and get checked out. Have an x-ray. I don't think there's anything wrong with you, but we don't have anything to do anyhow." And so I went to the hospital and was x-rayed, and I knew that there was no problem. And in an hour, the report came back. Nothing was broken. 4 weeks later, three shifts back around, the same night shift. The middle of the night, the telephone rang from the hospital. A young doctor there who had just finished his internship had been working through the night, had nothing to do at last, and looked at a stack of x-rays that were on a filing cabinet about to be filed by the secretary the following day. And he thought, "I think that I will work with my ability to read x-rays. I'll take these x-rays and I will read the diagnosis myself and then see what the other doctors have stated." And he did this for about an hour, and finally he came to one, and as he read the x-ray, his expertise said, "This person has carcinoma of the right femur." That means cancer of the right bone just above the knee. And he looked at the diagnosis, and it said, "No broken kneecap." He checked my medical record, because that was my x-ray. It was incredible. Why would that stack of x-rays have waited so long to be filed? Why were they put on that filing cabinet at that moment? And why did he decide to do something that was out of the ordinary? And upon reading it, he checked my record, was frightened for me, called me to the hospital and said, "Young man, you have a very serious condition that if it is not corrected, you will lose your right leg and possibly your life. I will stay with you this morning and make arrangements in a nearby city at a medical center for you to receive immediate medical attention, the best that we have. You will certainly have to take cobalt therapy, and I don't know what else that can be done to save your leg." My first reaction was one of astonishment. My mind could see that this was a fortuitous event. There was something more here than met the eye. And the next reaction was as though an ancient wisdom, an ancient understanding rushed forward into my young consciousness, and I knew the seriousness of the problem. And yet there was absolutely no concern. I was certain that I would be healed. Those next weeks became some of the most exciting weeks of my young life. It was an adventure. I felt that I was being healed. And I was healed in a remarkable way. Serendipity. The secret that in every seed of seeming tragedy is hidden the fruit of glory and reward. Now, out of the events that occurred at that time, my life changed. So many things occurred that were unexpected and fortuitous. The life that I thought had been denied me by the unpleasant circumstances of my childhood. Well, today, of all the men upon this earth, I think that I am the most blessed. Serendipity. Apocatastasis. Try it for yourself the next time that you're in an indigo mood. The next time that your dream house is washed away by a flash flood. The next time that something isn't working out the way you think it ought to work. Try it. Try believing that this is exactly what is supposed to occur so that the other important and beautiful, the magnificent, the life-changing thing can come into your experience. Believe it. See beyond the experience. This, to the physician, this means that the wound will heal, that the broken bone will mend, the pain will cease. And to the mathematician, apocatastasis means that there is always a perfect solution to every problem. And there really is. And to the princes of Serendip, it meant a glorious phase of serendipity. You're a special creation. This is a living universe. This universe is alive. It is. And when we truly awaken to become adventurers, resisting not, enjoying, moving forward with alacrity, excitement, expectancy, calmness, peace, living in now moments, handling what occurs with a calm spirit, with confidence, believing that there's more here than meets the eye. To that person, serendipity becomes a reality. And to that person in every instance, not by chance, but by choice, by design, there will appear, as if by magic, that which could have been because it already was. George Matheson wrote, "O joy that seeketh me through pain, I cannot close my heart to thee. I trace the rainbow through the rain and feel the promise is not vain that morn shall tearless be." There's a rainbow there. See it. And you'll make the rainbow connection. God bless you.
This concludes the lesson on Side A. Now, please fast forward to the end and turn the cassette over for the continuation of The Secret Power of Serendipity.